Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Collider Ladies Night. I am very excited to talk some Rings of Power right now with Nazanin Boniadi. Oh my, I'm so happy I finally get to talk to you after seeing episodes.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's right. Last time you hadn't seen it. Okay.
There's been a lot of stuff that I've been very curious about. Now I have answers, but also now I just have more questions. So
yes, I understand that fully.
All right. So the first thing we do on Ladies Night is we play a game called Dicey Questions. And usually it involves a dice tower, but the dice tower is on the West Coast. I am on the East Coast at the moment. So you will pick your own numbers here. I have 8 questions. You'll give me 3 numbers, and then whatever questions you land on, that is where we start at least.
So do I choose them now?
Maybe pick one at a time, because I'll never remember them.
2.
Okay. We have already landed on a Rings of Power one, which makes me happy. If you could swap roles with anyone in the cast, who would you pick and why would you want to play that character?
I'm going to have to say Nori, Brandy Foote, played by Markella Kavanagh, because I just think she's got so much heart. There's just so much empathy, and that character just is an empath, and I love that.
I love this whole ensemble. Bronwyn and Nori are my favorite thus far. I mean it. All right, what is your second number?
Okay, I'm gonna go with 8.
Okay, 8 is a solid pick too. I'm actually really happy you picked this one. I'll explain why after you give me your answer, but this one is called Zombie Apocalypse Team Up. There is a zombie outbreak on the set of Rings of Power. You can select 2 cast members to join your team of survivors. Which 2 cast members do you pick to give yourself the best chance of surviving?
Ismael Cruz Cordova's character, Arondir, because
the real person, not the character.
Oh, the real person. Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. Oh, that makes it slightly more interesting.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to say Sophia Nonvete, because A, she's a dear friend of mine, but B, she will just like defend her loyalty, you know, of like, nope, you don't mess with my friends. Nope. But I think that's very important. Okay. And goodness, who's the second person? I'm going to have to go with Ismael, I think, because... Oh, it's a tie between Markella and Ismael, because I think there's both of those things. I need that sort of like, I think Markella has this ability to look at a person and then like maybe the zombie will just freeze, because it's no muscle power needed. She's just got those eyes that'll just make you like, oh, maybe I don't want to hurt anybody, because look at, she's looking at me with such kindness. And then Ismael's got that just like, don't mess with my peeps. So yeah.
So I'm happy we landed on this one, because I just played that with Markella a couple minutes ago and she picked you.
Yeah.
So I think you're all on the same wavelength and it's the right one. All right. Yeah. We have one more number to pick. What you got?
3.
All right. 3 is never again. What is something that you did for a role in the past that now makes you say, I'm really glad that I tried that, but I'd rather not do that again?
Yeah, this one is like the answer came to me immediately. And that is on How I Met Your Mother. There was a scene with a rat on Nora's head. Yeah, that was a real rat. And that rat decided to defecate on this head. And it was disgusting, guys. Never again am I going to act with a rat.
Is it like when a bird poops on you and it's supposed to be good luck, like a good omen?
Even if it is good luck, I feel like, yeah, don't need that kind of luck. No.
Fair enough. All right, let's jump into the meat of it now. Every Ladies Night conversation begins here. What is the movie, the performance, personal experience, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor?
That's really... Okay, I want to say it was Roman Holiday and Audrey Hepburn, because I love all things Audrey. But that movie was just so special to me. The magic of not only her, but that entire movie, the idea of being transported completely and utterly and having, and sort of just like dreaming. I think it's about dreaming. That's when I was like, I just want to make people dream, you know?
As you're explaining that, I'm thinking, yeah, the movie that made me dream and believe is Jurassic Park. So it's like two totally different examples of getting at the same
thing. That's so funny.
It's movie magic.
It is. It's movie magic.
All right. So you say to yourself, I want to be an actor. But then what did you think at the time step one to becoming an actor was? And now having gone through that phase of the process, is that step something you would recommend to an aspiring actor out there?
So it's interesting because I was going to be a doctor and I was pre-med. So my degree's in biology and I graduated with honors because I worked so hard. It did not come naturally to me. And then in my mid-20s, I was like, oh, I'm going to go act now. And needless to say, my parents were like, wait, what? You can't just throw away medicine. And so I just started taking as many classes as I could. I didn't go to drama school at the time. But yeah, I think my advice would be to my younger self of it's okay to make mistakes on screen and learn from it, because I was so hell-bent on, you know, I had, as a lot of actors do, imposter syndrome, right? Of like, I'm supposed to be a doctor. I'm not supposed to be doing this. So I think just it's okay. Cut yourself some slack and it's okay to like learn as you go and improve and grow.
I feel like I might be getting too specific with this follow-up, but do you remember a moment on set where it really hit you, where maybe being word perfect wasn't the right route, but you actually had to feel something out in the moment and maybe make a mistake in order to find the magic in a scene?
Yeah, I remember, because my first really sort of continuous job was General Hospital. And I remember, because, you know, you shoot, what is it, an episode a day, you don't have time to play as much as you want to. You're usually doing one, at the most two takes to sort of like get the day done. And so with that comes just learning lines and not sometimes being able to play with it as much as you want. And I would just put so much pressure on myself of like, no, but I wanted to do it more this way or that way. And sometimes it's about just the logistics of getting something done, and being hard on ourselves actually doesn't help the process.
Need to remind myself of that more often than I do. Opening it up to all of your other TV experience, or maybe like some of the smaller roles to start, or some of the shorter appearances, like things like How I Met Your Mother, Scandal, before becoming a series regular, which would you say kind of illuminated things the most for you in terms of, you know, what you wanted in an on-set environment when you were committed to a show as a series regular?
Those two examples that you gave were perfect examples of, first of all, I'm pinching myself, because it's like the first comedy I did was one of the biggest comedies out there, How I Met Your Mother. The first series I landed as a series regular drama was Homeland. I'm like pinching myself. It had come off of Golden Globes and Emmy wins and a sort of a cultural moment, that show. And then the first fantasy I do is this. I don't know how I've gotten so lucky, but with each of these jobs, I've learned so much. How I Met Your Mother was all about cast dynamic, having fun on set. Those showrunners were, you know, I just love them so much. Just the kindest, most nurturing, most humble people. And I learned what it is to be a part of something, even though I was a recurring role and not a series regular, of being accepted. And those actors are just so lovely. And then Scandal, the incredible powerhouse, Shonda Rhimes, is just a staunch advocate of all things good, I feel like. And she is, she taught me what it is to be a fierce female leader in this industry and create a real, and Kerry too. Kerry Washington was such, you know, she created from the top up, those ladies created such a wonderful, inclusive environment. So I feel so lucky to have been just sort of learned from the best and come up through such great examples of what it is to be a successful, not only a successful show, but a well-functioning, a well-oiled show.
I feel like the more we talk about that part of the process, the better. But I'm actually going to veer away from that really quickly and talk a little more about like the craft and the actual process of bringing these characters to screen. In all of your past TV and film projects, which two actors would you say have the most polar opposite approach to their work, where, you know, when you were on set with one person versus another, you would know that you as their scene partner would have a completely different experience and it would kind of, you know, broaden your idea of how many different processes and approaches there are out there?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it's so different because when you're working in comedy, there's a looseness, there's a banter that goes on between takes. There's a, you know, you're not staying in, well, sometimes you are, I suppose, depending on what you're filming, but you know, there's Homeland versus How I Met Your Mother, two completely different experiences. So you have someone who is more method and stays in it, like a Mandy Patinkin, and needs to be in the moment. And I revere his technique and everything he brings to the screen. Also, he's an incredibly kind person and friend, so I have an immense amount of respect for him. But then you also have just, you know, people who joke between takes and they don't need to stay in it. And which was basically most of the cast of How I Met Your Mother. So to go from one sort of extreme to the other, if you will, of a very sort of upbeat and carefree set to a more disciplined and, you know, and I would even say that Claire and Mandy have different techniques. Even within a show, people have different techniques. All of us do. But yeah, it's always wonderful learning from various people, like how they get into and come out of a character.
Is there anything you've yet to try in terms of an approach to the work that you're eager to put to use, whether it's on season two of the show or any other project you touch?
I mean, it's interesting because my friends will tell you that I stay in accent or I, you know, even if I'm not exactly an accent for the entirety of the show, it's not a method thing for me. It's just a matter of like my brain not forgetting how to do the dialect. So that's something that I think helps me. And it might be a subconscious thing, but I'd like to continue it because I think it does help with just how you sort of, the ease of going in and out of it. Because it's my brain just doesn't function the way some people do, which is like going out into the accent, come out of the accent very, very easily.
All right, let's get into a film really briefly. So the one that I wanted to ask about was Iron Man. Is there anything, any kind of impression that set made on you in terms of what it might mean going forward, being on like a big studio blockbuster type set?
Yeah, I mean, I literally had one scene in the original Iron Man, but it was a very fun scene to shoot. I think I spent a couple of days with those guys. And I went to the London premiere, which is going to be the same location as the London premiere that we have for this. So it's sort of coming full circle, coming back 16 years or so later. But Jon Favreau is just an incredible person, incredible director, leader. He set the tone for that film. Robert Downey too. I didn't share the screen with him, even though my scene is playing in his scene, which is because I'm a reporter. So all of them, it was just such a pleasure because you have this expectation as a new actor to meet these legends and for there to be ego, for there to be some kind of exclusivity, and there really wasn't. And John, I just want to publicly thank John Favreau because he is part of the reason I think I got the show Counterpart, because Justin Marks, the creator of Counterpart, worked with John on Jungle Book, and because he wrote Jungle Book. And I think he made a call to John and said, you know, about me. And I think John spoke very favorably about me and my experience. And I then bumped into John a few years later, a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. And he was so complimentary, so supportive, and so proud that he had me in Iron Man. And now that I'm here. So this is before Lord of the Rings, but it all comes full circle for me. And I think being in that world helped inform this moment.
I love hearing about collaborators who continue to support each other and push each other's careers forward, because I feel like that's a vital part of the process here.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so absolutely. Another thing I always like bringing up on Ladies Night is some bumps in the road and how we've processed them and overcome them. And the one that I wanted to bring up was Ben-Hur, and specifically because, like, one of the things that fascinates me most about being an artist in this industry is, like, you are focused on your craft and what you are creating, and then box office and business is a whole nother side of it. So in a situation like that, how do you, I guess, separate a movie success with knowing that the work you did was done well, so that, you know, it doesn't get in your head when you move on to the next thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one thing that sticks in my mind is someone once said, if you believe the good things people say about you, then you have to believe the bad things people say about you. So the key is to know who you are, know how hard you've worked. I'm lucky that I came out sort of somewhat unscathed from sort of critical backlash from that. But even if I had received any kind of negativity through that experience, I think I would just say that we've all experienced people not liking us for various reasons, whether it's something we've done on screen or not. And the key is, it's so subjective, and we have to let it go. We have to do our jobs, do it well. And I know that everybody at the time filming that thought they were doing the best they could. And, you know, I think that people have moved on and done other things, and you do things for various reasons, and you have to sort of let it go after the fact, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And you really got an opportunity to work with a very special creator on that. I'm a big fan of Team Wars and how reshaped this industry time and time again. So what was it like working with him as a director? What kind of unique impression did he make on you?
I have a lot of love for Timur. And again, it's tough when things don't pan out in the commercial sense, when, you know, you've put your heart and soul into something. And he did. He was a really great guy to work with, a really great director. And we had so much fun in Rome, filming in Rome. We really did. And you never want things to sort of not be received as well as you'd hope. But at the same time, you sort of just have to remember that you had a really positive experience working with the people you've worked with, and Jack and the rest of the team are a delight and brilliantly talented, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. You don't have to tell me that. I love that ensemble so much. All right. Yeah. Tiptoeing into Rings of Power now, I wanted to go back to your first audition for the role, especially given the fact that, you know, this is like a highly anticipated, highly top secret production here. So what would you say is the biggest difference between auditioning for Rings of Power versus any other audition you've done before?
Well, first of all, it was a very long process. It was months and months, 4 different auditions, 1 in person, 3 on tape, because I was traveling around the world on various things. And just waiting, the anticipation of, surely we must have some news. And all I kept hearing is, you're in the mix. And we hear that often as actors, but usually we get the answer to that sooner and not, it doesn't usually take 4 or 5 months to hear what the outcome is. And so the anticipation was killing most of us. I think the journey was similar for most of the actors. And when I got the news, it was very short turnaround. So it was like, you got the job, you're moving to New Zealand in like 3 weeks. So you need to uproot your life and move to New Zealand. And of course, I was beyond happy to and excited and felt so blessed. It really is a dream come true.
Throughout that entire process, was it always, because I know sometimes when you have a big ensemble, you might go in for one role and then wind up with another. Was it always Bronwyn the entire time?
it was always Bronwyn for me. I know that people, various people audition for various parts. For me, I only auditioned for Bronwyn. At that time, she had a code name. We all had code names, pseudonyms. So yeah, to sort of keep it under wraps. But the one thing I knew was that this is the character I'm playing. Now, how that fit in to the series and how Bronwyn, which species she would be, or type of Middle Earther, I had no idea.
Okay, so then you book the role, you're getting ready to move to New Zealand, and you do whatever beginning prep you have to. What is the biggest difference between what you envisioned for the character before hitting set and then who she turned out to be when you actually got to dig into the role?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like I knew that she was a healer. I knew she was the single mother of a rebellious teenage son. I knew she was in a forbidden romance with an elf. What I didn't realize was that she was also going to sort of tap into her inner strength and resilience. And there was going to be more to her than meets the eye as far as that strength, and that she would assume any kind of sort of responsibility for her people. That was new to me as the season went along, and I realized that she's so multifaceted. And I just love that about her. And it really, really made me want to just sort of dive in to play. There's so much about her that resonates with me. She's a healer. I was pre-med. And also this sort of like desire to liberate her people from the shackles of their past resonates with me, because I'm an activist from my homeland, Iran, a human rights activist. So there's so much. She's sort of like the fantastical version of myself, which I love.
I love how that connection happens. So you brought up her people. I'm not sure if you're even able to answer these types of things, or maybe I'm overthinking it and making it too specific, but I know she said she was born in Horton, but then she obviously moves. What does she think her people is? Is it town specific, or is it more Southland in general?
It's Southland in general, the Southlanders, who basically historically her ancestors hundreds of years back chose the side of evil over good, and they're now paying for it. They were banished to barren lands. They were, you know, forced to start from scratch with nothing, being watched over by the elves, not trusted, very much outcasts in Middle-earth. And she sort of, her desire is to sort of liberate them so that they're not sort of occupied and watched, but at the same time, sort of have them also move on from their past. And it's a tall order. This is someone who is already sort of an outcast because she's in a forbidden romance with an elf, a single mother to a rebellious teenage son. She's got a lot of obstacles. And so, yeah, to overcome them and to win, and that's what I mean by her inner strength. She has to win the trust and the sort of that position of leadership within her own people.
Oh my God, I have so many follow-up questions. Before I go too far into more character specifics, there's one other part of the process of making a show that I wanted to ask you about, because whether it's a pilot episode, or in your case, filming two episodes and then going on hiatus and then coming back, you can learn like a whole lot with that time to reflect. So what would you say is something that you learn while making episodes one and two, you were able to reflect on and then apply to the work going forward?
Well, I think it was great because we had J.A. for the first two episodes, J.A. Boyonia, who's phenomenal. And I learned so much from him, because he did takes, for example, where he'd do silent takes. So he'd play music in the background, but you wouldn't say your dialogue. So you'd go through all the emotions of a scene. I'd never done this before.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. I've never heard of that before.
It's so cool. But what that allowed me to do was sort of remind myself, because actors, you know, sometimes we learn the lines and we deliver the lines and we think that might be all there is to it. Of course, there's layers. But what that helps you do is remember the emotional context of the scene and not rely on your words alone. So it's a constant reminder throughout the season that even though other directors don't have that technique, it's a really fun tool to be able to remind yourself that a lot of the times what we're communicating is not actually, doesn't have to be through words.
I'm never going to forget that. I feel like I'm going to find excuses to bring up something of the sorts during interviews going forward now. All right. So more Bronwyn specifics. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was the costume in particular. And if you could pinpoint some details of it that I guess kind of speak to her past, speak to where she is now, and maybe even anything that might reflect where she wants to go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, costume designer Kate Hawley's just genius. Like, she had this thing, she had a room I think it was called The War Room. I can't remember exactly what she called it, but it was so incredible. You walked in and she had basically created a whole world of costumes and images and inspiration, images of inspiration that helped her form those costumes for the various five different worlds, the dwarves, Harfoots, elves, humans, and Numenoreans, Southlanders and Numenoreans. And to go in there was to recognize that she was so important to creating what you see on screen. The costumes are a character in and of themselves. And I think Bronwyn's is, you know, Bronwyn reminds me a lot of the Ruby character in Cold Mountain played by Renee Zellweger, sort of like of the earth, very sort of grounded movements. There's nothing glamorous about the character. And her costume, even though I'm constantly covered in dirt and mud, but you know, the costume is blue and she chose blue for Bronwyn, despite the fact that the canvas, if you look at the overall canvas of the Southlanders, there's a lot of beige, gray and beige. But with her, that pop of blue almost signifies that she's an outcast, that there's something different about her, that she's slightly ostracized. And an element of rebellion of like that, you know, she doesn't quite fit in with the rest of them in her ideas and the way she is. And that yearning for reaching out and connecting with the other, which is sort of her romance with the elf, forbidden romance. So that, even that in and of itself, and then people don't realize, but I was wearing sort of these custom handmade leather leggings, if you will, or pants with handmade leather boots, like stitched to perfection, that I really want. I need those boots in my life. But yeah, I mean, all those things, the element, the little things that made her feel empowered, that made her feel like Bronwyn.
Is there any significance to the cuff on her arm?
No particular significance that Kate told me about, other than the fact that she felt, we did talk about the fact that she, you know, Bronwyn is a bit of a unassuming sort of warrior, you know, she becomes sort of, and it was sort of empowering to have that there. There's a little bit of like shield-like element to it that makes you want to fight, if you will.
From the viewer perspective, I see something like that and I'm like, I need an arm cuff now because it's going to make me feel stronger. So it had the intended effect.
Yeah.
Let's get into a specific now from episode two. There's one particular beat that kind of really like caught my eye and ear. It's the moment where Theo tells her to run out and get help. And there's a pretty long pause at the door where she's definitely thinking about doing what he said, but then she goes back in. So for you playing a moment like that, what is fueling that decision to go back in instead?
It's the mama bear in her. She understands that if she leaves to get help, she may never see her son again. And it's almost that idea that no one is going to protect my son like I can. I have to, if anything happens to him, I have to be here for him. And me leaving him, and if anything happens to him, I will never forgive myself. So I think, again, it was her idea of sort of, I can't leave my baby. And in that moment, she had the decision of do I run for help or do I hide somewhere and try to get to my son and save him myself? And that's, I think, the first time you see Bronwyn's sort of inner lioness come out and to protect her baby, her cub.
She's going to have her hands full protecting him.
Yep.
You've also brought this up already, but she is very clearly shaping up to be a leader and already has those qualities in her. What are tactics and approaches to leadership that would make her stand out from other leaders that we are going to see in Rings of Power?
I think I see her as a grassroots leader. So she's not an expected leader. She's not a political type. She's not a diplomat. She's not, she wasn't born to do this. She earned it. Because she's sort of like someone whose instincts are really strong, who has a very sort of, I feel like has a strong moral compass, and is a unifier of types. I don't think she's like, it's not sort of a us versus them. She seeks sort of, what's the best way to move forward and leave the negativity behind us and forge a strong future and come together. And how do we work with instinctively she wants to overcome the bad in her past, the negative in the Southlanders' past, and form a better future. So she's a character that's filled with hope and doesn't sort of hold on to the darkness that a lot of Southlanders have a hard time moving on from their lot in life, and what they sort of see themselves as the victims of all of this. So why are we outcast? Why are we not trusted? Whereas with her, she's trying to more overcome that. And I think that lends itself to sort of hope and moving forward.
After seeing the episodes and then talking to you and Markella and how you emphasize certain qualities in your characters, it's like no wonder that I am most drawn at this point to Bronwyn and Nori. Very much love what is really shining through both of your performances in these first two episodes. And I can't wait to see more. Congratulations on this and everything you've accomplished. Thanks for sharing some of your stories with us on Ladies Night.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of your show.
That means the world to me. Thank you. So I'm a huge fan of your show now, too. I'm so glad I finally got to see episodes.
Oh, I'm so glad. Me too. It's really hard to do interviews without that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.